Well, good morning, Jacob's Well. All right, you're right. Greg Meyer, great to be with you today as we continue our alteration series. The TED group life is moving up again. In fact, we're going to have a Connect event after the service here. So just right up in here in front. So before you leave today, make sure you check in with one of the, there are going to be seven chairs, one for every day of the week. Go check in with days of the week that maybe you could be a part of group life. If you're already in one of those, go to that one and just see who's there and maybe who's checking it out. And if you're needing to kind of figure it out, that's just come and take a couple minutes and do that at the end. So I don't know if you know about TED videos, TED Talks. It's just, you just got to go watch one. They're typically 12 to 18 minutes long. And it's some expert in the world that is just on top of something that we should all know more about, and they get that 12 to 18 minutes to tell the world what is so important about what they do and why it changes everything for us. So we have weeded through the thousands of these and picked out six or seven of them to use in group life that's starting, and it's just a great way to dip into some really deep conversations. And if they've got some people that maybe, you know, they're not so sure about this church thing, but they may be interested in community and interested in what you're doing, this would be a great entry point, because these aren't religious, but they take you into places where you can't help dealing with the deepest stuff of life. So just a great common ground for everybody. So take a chance, take a look at these, and group life is really important for us. And we really believe as a congregation that it's important for us to gather here on Sundays or whenever we happen to gather as a larger community to kind of learn more about our faith, to be a community, to keep God at the center of our life. But we also know that when you're all here together, you know, face it, I do more talking than you do. I do more talking than you're supposed to do. No. No, you need times when you're the one who's doing the talking. And group life is your opportunity to get some traction in your faith and to be dealing with other people and learning, encouraging, supporting, learning from other people. So we really think, you know, what's a really important 1-2 punch for you? That is to be here on Sunday mornings and then be part of group life. So take that seriously. We hope to have you doing a bit of that. As we jump into our series today, let's just start with a word of prayer. God, you've called us together here for a reason today. There's a message that each of us needs to hear. And each of us is going to hear it in our own way, and we entrust that to you. So help us to open up our minds and our hearts to where your Spirit leads us. Help us to embrace and help others to have that experience as well. And we thank you. We thank you that you're here. And we ask you to help us to be mindful to continue to open our doors so that those who aren't here yet can also be here with us in your presence and in our community. In your name we pray. Amen. Okay, well, we are in this series called Alterations. Yes, we know that it's spelled wrong. It's on purpose. And it's because we're talking about altars. And we are dealing with Peter's story, a specific part of Peter's story, which is found in John's Gospel, chapters 18 and 21. We send those out every week. If you don't get our weekly email, let us know, and we'll make sure that you do. Just write it on your communication card. You can put that in the offering basket when it goes around. But there's also a blue carton of Bibles over there. So if some of you wanted to like run over there and get one right now to follow along with that, you're welcome to do that. Please do. You might find it, it's kind of a fun thing to do. There's also the real essential stuff is printed in your Sunday papers, but I think it's nice to be able to follow along in the story right from the Bible. And as we're talking about that, we've been talking about Elijah. A couple weeks ago we talked about Abraham and his story. And, you know, so we've got an altar here right now. Jacob's Well, we normally don't have an altar because, see, this is what altars are all about. An altar, and this is a fill-in on the back of, on your outline, on the back of your Sunday paper if you want to take a look at that. But an altar is a place where God meets you and God changes you. I mean, as far back as you go where altars are in the Bible, that's what happens. It's a place where people come into the presence of God. They have encounters with God. And then they end up being different afterwards. Something changes when things get put on the altar. Because when they get put on the altar, they're given to God. And God doesn't leave anything the same. God gives it back to us in bigger and richer sort of ways. We very deliberately don't have an altar at Jacob's Well. Well, we do right now. We normally don't have an altar here at Jacob's Well because we've got all of you guys, and you are the altars. This is where God's at work, in your lives. And so we want to make that important. So the altar here on these weeks is really symbolizing just what God is doing in each of us. And you've been spending some time kind of figuring out what are the things that we need to put on the altar that keep us from God, the things that are distractions, the things that are precious that we need to let God have and to God handle. And so those are some important things about here. So the fact is that altars aren't something that happen outside of us. They're not in the temple. They're not in a different place. They're within us. And they aren't just waiting there. Like, one of the reasons we don't have an altar here all the time is like you think, well, once a week I come in the presence of God somehow, give that kind of a symbol or that kind of an image. No, you are always there. God is this inexorable. God is this ubiquitous force within our lives, always calling us forward, always calling us into God's presence, always transforming who we are and what we're doing. Today, we're looking at Peter, okay? And his story goes all through the New Testament in the Bible. He's one of the big followers of Jesus, one of the big disciples of Jesus. But we're really focusing on, particularly on a part of his story that's told in John's Gospel in chapters 18 and 21. But here's where Peter's story starts. First of all, when Peter comes into the story of the Bible, his name is not Peter. Okay? It's Simon. Right? He gets his name changed later. His name is Simon, and he's a fisherman. And Jesus comes up to him and some of his buddies that are out, some of his fishing buddies, and he says, "Follow me." All right, that's the very beginning. That's really pretty important that Peter's story with Jesus starts with Jesus saying, "Follow me." And he does. Now, what's really funny is, you'll find that. That's Matthew 4. "Come, follow me," Jesus said, "and I will make you fishers of men." Right? I'm not going to change who you are, but I'm going to change what you're about and what you do with it, what your purpose in all this is. Now, this is why his story is so important. Now, yeah, sure, he's an important disciple, and we should all know who he is, you know. He's got a nice cathedral named after him and all that kind of stuff, you know. He's got a city in southern Minnesota named after him. But that's not the point. The reason his story is so important, the reason that I think it got lifted up so much in the Bible and that we spend time with it now and want to understand who he was is because his story tells our story. And God made things happen in his life that he wanted us to know because there are things that need to happen in our lives as well, each in our own ways, but it's something that happens. And this is what I'm talking about. No matter how accomplished any of us are, no matter how good at stuff and how confident we might be about all that, we all have a little bit of that Woody Allen syndrome. You know, probably one of his most famous lines is, "I wouldn't ever join a club that would have me as a member. And we all laugh, yeah, you know, partly because we get it, you know. I kind of feel that same way, too. If it's good enough, if they would let me in, well, I want to mix with people that are better than me because the truth is I know too much about me. I know who I really am. You know, they may think I'm good enough to get in there, but that's because they don't know the real me. And you know, there are the real self-confident ones among us. There are the people with the overactive egos and this, you know, just always out there, you know, totally self-assured. Psychologists would probably say they're probably compensating for some unconscious insecurity. I don't know. But then there's the most of us, and that is, we do just know too much about ourselves. We know the stuff that we can't do. We know the stuff where we've mucked up and failed and couldn't get it right. And we just know that we're thankful that some people like us. And, you know, and so I don't know how all that works for you, what your experience with that is. For some of us, I mean, that's where we live all the time. And we constantly feel like we are unworthy. We constantly feel like, the world is just beating up on us and there's really no hope for us. I know for me personally that I spend a fair amount of time there. I mean, I have my good days. I'm generally a, you know, pretty self-confident kind of guy and pretty ready to go and everything. And when I'm, you know, so when I'm climbing up the hill or at the top of it, life is good. And I don't, you know, I'm not plagued about those worries and those thoughts too much. But if you ever catch me more at the valley or maybe on the way down, it's not so good. I mean, those questions are really hard. I mean, don't we all just have these senses of inadequacy? Don't we have these things that if everybody knew this about me, they wouldn't want me up in front of them preaching? I'm not going to tell you. It's true. We all are there. And that was Peter's story. Peter was very much like that himself. He was always struggling with this. Now, what's kind of interesting is that Peter's story started with those simple words, "follow." Okay? Peter is like us in all of our kind of wavering on how worthy we are or not, and only in a kind of a mega way. But But Peter's story with Jesus, Peter's story with God begins with that word follow. Now, you notice, Jesus walks up to him while he's out fishing and says, follow me. And there was no interview. There were not competitive applications. He did not have a stack of references. And it wasn't because Jesus was just so clairvoyant and he could see, you know, this leader, jewel in the rough leader, just waiting to be emerged. I mean, no. Jesus just knew that those qualifications weren't what he was looking for. He was just looking for a man. He was looking for anybody. He was looking for everybody. And Peter was one of them. And so the only thing that had to happen for Peter was to be asked, come and follow me. That's where his story begins. Nothing great. Now, so Peter starts out, a little more background on him. So Peter is really kind of the best and the worst of the disciples. No one else in the Gospels gets as much treatment as Peter. We hear more about him, and you kind of just constantly are shaking your head as you read his story, because he has his great moments and he has his unbelievable moments. Some of these stories you may be familiar with. There's a time when Jesus comes walking over the water to the disciples while they're in a boat, and Peter sees him out on the water and says, my Lord, and he gets out and he starts walking across the water to Jesus too. Wow, you know, what a demonstration of faith. I'm sure all the other disciples are going, oh my goodness, how did he do that? You know, but he doesn't get too far. And the wind is blowing, and he looks at the waves. He takes his eyes off Jesus, and he sinks. All right? You know, a great moment, yeah, but then he sinks anyway. And so then there's another time when Jesus comes. It's to the disciples, and he says, I'm here to wash your feet. He's got a towel and everything and the water, and he's ready to wash his feet. And Peter says, you can't wash my feet. You know, you're too good for that. And Jesus just says, no, Peter, this is my job. I'm here to wash your feet. And so then Peter, trying to overcompensate, says, well, okay, then why don't just wash my feet, wash all of me, you know? And Jesus says, no, Peter, your feet's enough, you know? You just can't quite get a balance. He's on one side and then the other. There's another time, and this is Peter's MVP moment, okay? When Jesus comes to the disciples and he says, well, what is everybody saying? Who are they saying I am? And the disciples, they don't really know how to answer this question. And, well, he's Elijah, he's one of the prophets, you know, I don't know. And well, and then Jesus turns it right at them and says, well, who do you say that I am? In other words, who are you telling everybody I am? This is Peter shines. He says, you are the Christ, the Messiah, the Son of the living God. Whoa. All the other disciples are just sort of sitting back and saying, gee, I wish I'd hit my buzzer faster. I knew that answer, you know. But Peter just jumped to the top, and he was a star. He's the one who understood who Jesus was and was not ashamed to say it and said it out loud and made this claim for who Jesus was, because he had been so touched in his life by him and could see God in the person of Jesus so clearly. And truly, Peter shone. But the very next scene, Jesus says, okay, so you understand who I am, then I got to tell you what I got to do. He says, I'm going to have to go to the chief priests and the rulers of Judaism, and they're not going to like me, and I'm going to suffer, I'm going to be tortured, and I'm going to be killed. In 3 days, I'm going to rise again. And Peter immediately flies off the handle and says, no way, God is not going to let that happen to you, and we're not going to let that happen to you, and you cannot do that. And then Peter gets the rebuke of the Bible. I mean, you know, there's the Pharisees and the Sadducees, all these people that Jesus beat up on a regular basis, and they got things like they were told that they were a brood of vipers and, you know, some things like that. But Peter, he saved the total diss for Peter. He called him Satan. He said, you are the total opposite of me. You are my total antagonist. Get behind me. Get out of the pit. Get out of the picture. So just his best moment, his worst moment. I mean, Peter tried so hard. He could do something so well, and he could screw up so royally right after all that. So in these stories, in fact, those stories where Peter gets the answer right, and then when he messes it up at the end there, that's where he gets his name, Peter. Jesus changes his name from Simon to Peter. Peter is Greek for nincompoop. Well, not quite. Actually, it means rock or stone. He called him the rock because he said, on this rock, I will build my church. on people like you that understand that I am the Christ, the Son of the living God. I am going to build this church. It's going to go on forever. It's going to be built of people like you. But when Jesus said that, he knew very well what that rock symbolized. Yeah, you can build things with a rock. But he also said right after that, when he has to scold Peter, he calls him a stumbling block. Change that to a stumbling rock. You're the kind of rock I can build a church on, but also if you get just left laying around here, people are going to get tripped up because of you. You're also the kind of rock that I can build a church with, that I can build the kingdom of God can become apparent in this world with, but you're also the kind of rock. Remember that time when you came walking over the water to me? Yeah, you were really a rock at that moment. You sank so fast, you know? Jesus understood that Peter could do such great things and had such potential in him, and that's why he said, come and follow me. He also knew that Peter could totally screw things up. He was totally incapable. He was totally unable to really do anything right on his own. And that's who Jesus called to follow. So he has his stories of doing things right and doing things wrong, getting things, moving things ahead, moving things backwards. And then we get right towards the end of our story here. As Jesus comes to Jerusalem, about kind of where we are in the calendar right now with Easter, he comes to Jerusalem and realizes that he's going to die. And he has this meal, this Passover meal with his disciples. And he says, someone is going to betray me and I'm going to die. And Peter again says, no, you know, this can't happen. We won't let this happen. Peter even says to Jesus, even if I have to give up my life for you, I won't let this happen. And Jesus turns to him and says, give up your life for me, huh? I would say that before this night is over, before the cock crows, before the rooster crows announcing daylight tomorrow morning, you're going to have denied me 3 times. Well, kind of crush Jesus. They go out in the garden. Jesus wants to pray. The soldiers come to arrest Jesus. Peter comes out and pulls out a sword, cuts off the ear of one of the servants of the guards, and Jesus just looks at him and says, don't you get it, Peter? You know, I have things that I need to do here. You're not going to say things this way. And so then Jesus is arrested, taken to the city to be tried. And then we get to this part here. This is on your Sunday papers. If you're following along in your Bible, we're on chapter 18 now. And it's verse 15. This little dialogue is split into two pieces. And let me just read this through. You can read along with me. Simon Peter and another disciple were following Jesus. And then pop down here a little bit. You are not one of his disciples, are you? He comes as he's going into the, I guess, the right page here from the Bible. So he gets into the courtyard, and this woman says to Peter, you are not also one of this man's disciples, are you? Peter says, I am not. Now the slaves and the police had made a charcoal fire because it was cold, and they're standing around it and warming themselves. Peter is also standing with them and warming himself. Now I just try to imagine what's going on in Peter's mind right now. I mean, he's had this rocky relationship with Jesus and following Jesus, and he's just messed up a couple times royally, and he's scared, and he just remembered that he denied Jesus one time. And then from verses 19 to 25 goes into, there's a little paragraph here about Jesus in his trial with one of the high priests. Verse 25 comes back. Now Simon Peter was standing and warming himself by the charcoal fire, and they asked him, you are not also one of his disciples, are you? Peter denied it and said, I am not. One of the slaves of the high priest, a relative of the man whose ear Peter had cut off, asked, did I not see you in the garden with him? Again, Peter denied it. And at that moment, the cock crowed. Kind of the ultimate. I mean, he'd messed up a lot. He'd got things kind of right and got things screwed up at this time. At Jesus' most important point in his life, as walking up to his death, he can't even admit that he knows the man. And he knows that Jesus had just said he was going to be doing this, and he does it. You know, at this point, and this is on your line, Peter not only messed up, I mean, we all understand messing up. Peter at this point gave up. He was done. He's not part of the narrative anymore. Jesus' trial goes on. He goes onto the cross and is executed. We don't hear anything about Peter. He's gone. He ran. In fact, we find out a little bit later that he goes back to fishing with his buddies. This was a great ride. I mean, this Jesus thing was wonderful. We thought it was really going someplace, but he gave up on Jesus. It's probably even maybe more out of shame, like even if somehow this does pull off and Jesus is who he is and this was right, I just denied Jesus 3 times. I'm not worthy. He wouldn't have me back if I wanted to be back. He takes his marbles and he goes home. But this is where we need to understand, and this is where Peter's story becomes more important to us than anywhere else. And that is simply this. That each time that we fail, Jesus forgives. It doesn't matter whether it's a big one or a little one. Jesus forgives, and he not only forgives, he resurrects. He brings life back. Because your failures, your inadequacy, are not obstacles to God. They're part of what God called and said, follow me. In the first place. What's that?
$5.
$5 bill? Anybody want a $5 bill? Only one taker for a $5 bill? Got two? Wow. Gee, you guys just must be flush. Okay, we're getting a few honest hands. You can just kind of poke them up, all right? So I'm going to give this $5 bill to someone. So got a couple people who want it at least. Are there other, like, all right. Yeah, a little more enthusiasm showing up. Now, before you take it, I just have to warn you, I'm going to crumple it up first. So it's all mushed up. You probably don't want it anymore, huh? You're still willing to take it? Any others that you still take it? Wow, that's pretty cool. Well, just in case, I'm mushing it in there. It's really flat, it's dirty, it's scrunched up. I don't suppose you still want it, do you? Whoa! There you go. She gets it. One of the most important lessons of life. That $5 bill is valuable, not because of what it looks like or how perfect a condition it's in, but because of the value that it has within it. It is worth $5. It won't be worth $5 to her. She maybe goes to the bank and gets a prettier one. Doesn't matter. But it's worth that $5. God sees us as worth what we were created to be. We do all kinds of things. We mess ourselves up. We don't perform. We don't do what we know we should do. And it doesn't matter. God still sees us as that value. So Peter's gone back to fishing. Not fishing for people this time, but just for fish. He gave up. He doesn't know. He doesn't know what else to do. But here's the thing, and this is the next one, is that God knows what's going on in his heart. God knows what's going on in our heart. We don't have to hide these things. I mean, that's one of the biggest things. We want to hide these truths from each other because we're worried about the judgment that others will have on us and how it'll reflect on us. God already knows. And the thing that we need to get over is that it isn't bad news that God knows what's inside you and what you're really like. It's actually really, really good news because it means you're free from that. You don't need to worry about that. It doesn't mean that it's okay and you can just wallow in it and live in it and that God doesn't want to change it. No, when you bring that real self to the altar, it gets put here and it comes into the presence of God because God knows that it is, and God will change it. God will make it. It doesn't mean you're going to get perfect all of a sudden. It doesn't mean it all goes away. But it's part of what God is working with. And you are under construction with God. There's a verse in Psalm that I like. It says, the psalmist is praying to God. It says, God, you know what I have done wrong. I cannot hide my guilt from you. And it's true. We can't. There is no way. God knows the truth about us. And that is a good thing. So we skip ahead after Jesus' crucifixion, after the story of the resurrection. And the disciples have no idea what's going on anymore. And So we find them, they're out fishing again, fishing for fish. And the story goes on, when they were, they're out there fishing, and they fish all night long, and they don't catch anything. And then this man appears on the shore and says, throw your nets out on the other side. And they do, and they get this huge catch of fish. And one of them says, you know, I think that's Jesus. And Peter says, you're right. And he again, can't control his enthusiasm. He jumps overboard. He swims ashore to be with Jesus. And when he gets ashore, this is verse 9 and 10, they saw a charcoal fire there with fish on it and bread. This is kind of fun. I mean, who's out fishing and can't catch any? The disciples. And Jesus, he's been on shore the whole time, and he's got fish, you know? And so he says, I think I'm going to feed you guys breakfast. I think it's time for a little fish and bread. You guys can't supply that for yourself. I think it's interesting that he meets Peter, not just with the meal he needs. I mean, it's morning and he's hungry. He's been working all night and he gets fish and bread. But there's sort of like a little, kind of like a sword being twisted there, isn't it? You know, the one thing that you thought you could do, you know, when you gave up on me, which was fish, you can't do. But I have fish. I have fish. But then he doesn't just say, I'm going to do it. Nothing about you is any good. He says, bring some of what you caught too. Yeah, you caught it because I helped you. But, you know, bring some of what you caught too. And they're going to grill that together. And we're going to eat that. Jesus had that. And so he asked them to share that meal. And then we get this wonderful exchange. Peter, now just think what's going on in his head. He couldn't stand, but when he saw Jesus, he loved him so much. He had so much hope in his life that he couldn't help but be there with Jesus again. And so he goes to be together with Jesus. But he knows, probably that Jesus knows what he did. That he denied him three times. And that he really is kind of the mess up, muck up disciple. But he doesn't really quite want to ask that. And so when they finish breakfast, verse 15, Jesus says to Simon Peter, Simon, son of John, interesting, he uses his old name, not his new name. Jesus, or Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these? He says, well, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. Well, Jesus says to him, then feed my lambs. A second time he says to him, Simon, son of John, do you love me? And Peter says to him, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. Jesus says to him, tend my sheep. He said to him a third time, Simon, son of John, do you love me? Peter felt hurt because he said to him for the third time, do you love me? Like, what's the point? I mean, you're trying to make me say something else or what? And Peter goes on and he says, if I can find it. And he says, Lord, you know everything. Oops, I just said it. You know everything. You know what I was trying to hide. You know what I was, where I was trying not to go. I was kind of hoping against hope that you didn't know that I turned my back on you, that I denied you three times that night that you were killed. But now I just said it out loud. You know everything. I suppose Jesus kind of nodded his head and says, feed my sheep. He knows everything. Peter denied Jesus three times. Peter started with Jesus with a call to follow me. Peter started as a fisherman who thought he could make his living that way. And here he is being told that, or asked, do you love me? Three times, kind of undoing the denials. And each time, not having it rubbed in his face, not telling him how unworthy he is, not telling him how this is going to have to be fixed, and he's going to have to get this, you know, all worked out before he can move ahead. But each time, he's given a job. Feed my sheep. Basically, he's saying to Peter, follow me. Follow me deeper. Follow me more. I have work for you to do. There is nothing that I can't use within you. You may have noticed there's some little tables around here. Anybody smell the charcoal? I think we got some fish coming in here. And so what I'd like us to do is just take a couple of minutes, and there's find a table that is near you, And there's going to be some crackers, and there's going to be some fish, and there's some wine, and there's some grape juice. The grape juice is clear, light-colored. The wine is red. And just go and serve one another. Serve yourselves and have some. And there's a couple of questions up here. Well, why does God keep giving us chances we don't deserve? And then how can we help pass on that same non-judgmental trust to others as well? So I'm going to ask you to go ahead and you can start pouring the stuff. The fish should be coming out shortly. I'll figure out where that is. So please, go ahead. Well, I have to thank Jed for working really hard. He was out there catching this fish in the creek this morning. And did a pretty good job on getting our timing right. So, you know, you can sit down where you are or go back to your seats. I just want to kind of bring us to a close here. Also, I give you an opportunity for our offering. The baskets are on my right, your left end of the aisles. You could pass one down. You put your communication cards in there and any gifts that you have. If this is your first time with us, we just thank you for being present. That is your gift to us. If this is your home, we thank you for sharing the burden of giving these gifts to God, putting them in the altar and letting that change us, letting that change our world and seeing what God can do through Jacob's Well, both because of us and despite us, just sort of like Peter. So thank you for your generosity in that as well. I can bring those up to the well as well. There is, some important stuff here, and I don't know, having this little bit of fish here might seem a little strange. It is. But it's a meal that Jesus met Peter with, and I think it's maybe good, maybe you had at least just a little glimpse of being on that shore with Peter and the other disciples and with Jesus in a time when you have no idea what's going on. Where did he come from? Who is this really Jesus? What is happening? What's going to happen next? Trying to understand this sacramental sort of meal, but just everything seems so strange and you have no idea what the future is going to be. But somehow you feel like this meal was for you. That the fact that this fish was on the grill with some bread was speaking to you in a way that you could never have anticipated and imagined. And that's what Jesus does with you too. I don't know where those yawning crevices are in your life, those places that are begging for acceptance despite what you know about them, the things that you don't want anyone to know, and you're afraid to even think about the fact that God knows it and that God loves you anyway. So one of the things that Peter learned, I think, through that meal, and hopefully that maybe you got a glimmer of it here, maybe you'll have a glimmer when you find this other kind of sacramental meal that at the altar that God prepares for you sometime, and you feel loved and accepted and called to follow by God. But this idea that God doesn't confuse our usability with our reliability. Peter was not a reliable disciple. He continues that way through the rest of the gospel, the rest of the book of Acts as Jesus goes out of the scene. But God doesn't confuse our usability with our reliability. God knows we're not terribly reliable. And God says, follow me. I've got important work for you to do. So there's one more little tidbit to the story that I kind of passed up on. And that is, hopefully you notice some symmetry, the follow and the follow. There's the three-time denial and the three-time, question, do you love me? And then feed my sheep, come and do my work for me anyway. There's also the symmetry of the fishing going on there with Peter in his story. But there's also one other little piece of symmetry, and I think, I don't know how deliberate Jesus was about all this, but it just seems incredibly well orchestrated. But when Peter denied Jesus three times that night before Jesus was crucified, what did he each time he was at this fire, right? It was a cold evening in Jerusalem, And people are huddled around these little charcoal fires, the only source of heat they could have. And he was around this charcoal fire, this fire, this thing that gives heat, it gives light, a fire that changes things, transforms things. In a lot of places, a lot of parts of the world, altars are always seen as fires, not as tables. And Peter is there at that altar, at that fire, that charcoal fire, and he denies Jesus three times. And then when Jesus calls him back on the beach and asks him three times, "Do you love me?" It's while they're standing around a charcoal fire again. It's kind of like Jesus is, without having to say it, so Peter had to acknowledge it out loud, saying, "I know. I know what happened last time you were standing around a charcoal fire. Okay? You don't need to worry about it. You don't have to apologize for it. You don't have to say anything. You don't have to excuse it. I know. But this fire is still here. It's warming you. It's changing things. It's cooking the fish that you will be fed from. Everything's different." And so this charcoal, this fire, this thing that burns up, this thing that gives life, Jesus says, "You know, this is how I know you. This is who you are. This is what I call you to." So kind of as a last thing today, band's going to play a song. I invite you to come on down during the song. I know, one more thing to do today. But there's some charcoal here. And I invite you to put your initials anywhere you want on the altar. And own that. Own your own truth about yourself. Give it to God. Say, "I know you know who I am. You know who this GM is. You know what I'm like. You know better than I do. And you call me to follow anyway." So I invite you to come and down and do that, and then you can just be at your seat.
And while we're walking, you can sit, but you can walk and sing at the same time.
Yeah.